obviously you got to start with the chassis. To me, just because you own a VIP chassis does not mean you own a VIP car. There's a difference, and it has to be built a certain way. We all have the same kind of goals with our vehicles. You have to be low, wide wheels, you know, great fitment, mm-hmm. all that stuff. There's a different level to it when it comes to VIP cars. There's no half-assing anything. Mm-hmm. Everything just has to be pretty much perfect.
Yo, what's going on, guys? Welcome to Substance Podcast. I'm your host, Liam.
And I'm your other host, Matt.
And this week's episode, we do have a guest with us. We have Mr. Lucas Ferretti. I feel like I sound really British when I say your last name.
Ferretti.
Pretty special, unique last name.
It's Italian, right?
It is.
Okay, go figure. And we're going to talk about some cool stuff today. I'm personally pretty excited about this because we're going to dive a little bit into some VIP culture, which is obviously my personal taste in cars. And we haven't done an episode that's more catered to that audience, although, you know, I bring it up in just about every episode. Before we jump into stuff with Lucas, Matt, what's new?
I'm gonna restrain myself. I will be going to Mexico to see Pal in 23 days, so I'm really excited about that. I just got lowering equipment for the TSX.
I've never heard anybody say lowering equipment.
I'm trying to avoid saying anything but coilovers.
Matt, if I say
equipment, they'll be like, maybe it's coilovers, maybe he's cutting the springs, maybe he's using washers. We don't know.
Lowering equipment could literally be you're zip tying the springs together.
So exactly. I like to keep the mystery going. So okay. Liam ruined it. Yes, I got lowering springs and spacers for the Accord. I'm going to keep it on stock wheels for now. I say that like it's a choice. It's not a choice. I only had enough for that lowering equipment right now. But I'm pretty stoked on that.
Wait, you should mention why. Cause Riverside, Matt had some leftover stickers from Riverside, or from Not Fast forever ago.
Oh yeah. Shout out to everybody that got a Not Fast anything, because y'all paid for that. So yeah. He's right. I appreciate you guys.
I'll say Matt's been tied up with stuff, and so hasn't been able to like do anything with his car. And yeah, I know he really wants to. And so we sold some Not Fast stuff.
Thanks
at the
to
booth
you guys. You directly led to my lowering equipment. So I appreciate that a lot. But yeah, I'm really excited about that. Other than that, man, it's just same as usual. I'm just super grateful for where I'm at, what I got, who I got. And the only thing I will say outside of that is I'm sorry in advance because spring hates me.
And not lowering springs. No, season spring.
Like, the season of spring absolutely hates me because it's like in the very beginning, as I'm sure you all remember, it was like my nose, and it would just block up the top half of my head. Well, now we're in phase two, where it goes straight to my eyeballs.
If you see Matt crying on here, it's not because he cares or he's actually emotional. It's just because he can't breathe.
Me, as an empath, has allergies. So I apologize in advance, once again, for any sniffling, coughing that may or may not sound like I'm dying. Just any other unpleasant sound that goes along with that, this is me apologizing in advance. But yes.
And if you guys want to see him suffering, you can go to the YouTube and watch this as opposed to Spotify or Apple Podcasts. But if you guys are on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please go give us five stars.
You'll get the Matt's allergies ASMR. Don't worry.
Yeah, it'll be great. But new stuff for me, there's not a whole lot. I've been really busy since Riverside, just dealing with a bunch of bullshit. But thankfully a lot of that is dealt with now, and I'm kind of just excited for the stuff moving forward with Substance and some new opportunities that I have coming up that I can't talk on just yet. But tomorrow, or actually, well, it's after when you guys are listening to this. But Saturday this weekend is a Radwood event in Chattanooga. And for any of you guys that aren't familiar, Radwood is basically like, it's a 80s, 90s period car show, where people are encouraged to dress up to match that period or that era. And I'm super pumped. I'm going to take the Majesta. There's going to be a Riverside booth set up. There'll be a whole bunch of cars related to that. And I believe we have like an entire street shut down just for that. So it should be a different, you know, change of pace. I've been so used to going to very specific car shows for such a long time. Like, I'm really excited about this kind of just being more chill and like different cars, and also getting to like dress up with your friends is super fun. So I'm pretty pumped on that. And Matt's coming because you're not working tomorrow now, which is great. Yes,
correct. I basically destroyed myself and my body today in order to do what I needed to do to not work tomorrow. So I'm pretty excited for that.
Yeah. But
really quick, Are you temperature wise, are you good? Because I'm somebody that like prefers hot, and I'm hot as shit.
I'm good.
You sure? Good. Okay. Luke, let us know. Let us know if like,
for anybody that isn't watching, Lucas is in a hoodie. And it is, this is, I don't know if we mentioned it in the last episode, but this is something that me and Matt did not consider. Through the winter, it was like decently cold in here. We didn't expect, or I mean, I don't know why we didn't expect it, but it gets hot in the summer. But
also, Lucas is also a hard motherfucker because he drinks NyQuil like from the bottle.
Oh my God.
He doesn't take it in pills. He just like, what? Man, I got this.
But yeah, it's a little warm in here, so we got a fan going, so I apologize if you guys can hear that. And it's not the ideal setup, which I feel like we say that every single episode. But anyway,
hey Liam, how do you feel about this table and these chairs?
Do not get me started.
I will say it is pretty dope just seeing the LS right in front of us.
That does add like an element.
We get
of
like
interest.
Distracted by it sometimes.
Oh,
like,
I do.
We'll just go into like this dream sequence. Like, man, can you? Oh, fuck! We're on the podcast.
Especially me, because like those wheels specifically, like I've dreamt about having those.
He just
like on a car.
Puts you in a daze.
Oh, it really does. Like I'm staring at those wheels like 60% of this. You know, but yeah, it is nice. It does add an element of interest, I guess, because the rest of the garage is just like a pile of everything.
So when YouTube, if you're on YouTube, when you think that Liam is like enamored with you and he's staring into the camera, he's actually just looking at the camera.
I'm staring slightly below the camera.
Sorry to burst your bubble if you like want Liam to be in love with you, but it's the car. It's not you.
If you do want me to be in love with you, though, my Instagram DMs are open. I'm just kidding. They're not. Please don't.
Come second after the LS.
Yeah, exactly. But if anybody wants to make a trade offer on the Majesta, though, anybody got anything interesting, I'm open. The Majesta is actually for sale, which I'm not really going to talk about that a whole lot in this because I'll make a YouTube video on it. But yeah, if anybody's got an interesting car you want to trade for it, let me know. Anyways, Lucas, let's talk about you.
I forgot you were here.
So you have a pretty like cool background in cars. You're not from the Tennessee area originally, right?
No, I'm not. Actually, originally I was born in Argentina.
Okay.
That's in South America.
I forgot this about you. Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm here legally.
I mean, you have to say that because you're on a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So I was born in Argentina, moved to this country pretty young, and I spent most of my life in New York City, in the Bronx, to be more specific.
That's actually sick, and I really want to hope that has like played a part in your like style and take on cars, because I grew up listening to a lot of music from New York. That's always been my genre of music. That like, if everybody, you know, that argument where it's like Tupac or Biggie,
right?
I'm always Biggie. Right. And I have just grown up obsessed with gangster culture. Yes. I don't look like it, blah, blah, blah. Well, but
that's why I'm in an Acura, because I'm from Atlanta and you know, Ludacris, he's got that legend. So I was like, that's fair. TSX close enough.
But no, like I wanna say that I had a lot of influence, I think, from hip hop culture into my taste in cars and why I really like VIP cars.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's ever like played a part for you.
And it's funny to think about because it's actually very true. I mean, granted, it's not, the styling isn't what you're used to as far as when you think of rap artists.
Right. I mean, you don't see it cambered out LS and
but the chassis in particular.
Yes.
A lot of rappers in the 90s had, you know, GSs when they came out, mm-hmm. first gen GSs, mm-hmm. and just all that stuff. I mean, just it's pretty cool. A lot of album covers.
Yep.
You can still find pictures to this day of Jay-Z and Biggie with first gen GSs. And
yep. So well, and also just the idea of having a big body is you know, that phrase is name dropped in hip hop culture all of the time. And I think just having big luxury sedans has played like such a big part in that culture. So yeah, that's definitely cool that you grew up in New York.
As a total, this is like, I'm so sorry, but this is a total aside, but I only say this because we've all at this point owned right-hand drive, like VIP chassis.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I'm listening to like a song and they talk about the foreign, I would be in my Majesta like, are you really though? What side of the car is your steering wheel on?
Oh my God.
How foreign is it?
When did you start getting into cars? Have you always been a car enthusiast? Did you just see something on the street sometime where you're like, that's sick?
So I wouldn't even call this a background, but mm-hmm. like most people, even to this day, that still collect Hot Wheels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty much where I started. I weirdly enough didn't care for Hot Wheels when I was little.
Yeah.
I actually had model cars like that you actually would display in cases,
the ones like die cast, like yeah,
stuff like that, which I actually got into because of my uncle when I was younger. That was something he would give me every year during Christmas. I didn't see him much, but once a year when I did see him at Christmas, that's what he would bring me. A die-cast vehicle. And that's what got me started. I was probably 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was already living in New York. But yeah, that's how I started. And that's where my love grew. I didn't play with those vehicles.
It was something that I displayed, them.
Which I guess kind of led to how I
played into like
now.
The aesthetics of building cars.
Just having that clean, like taken care of vehicle.
Yeah.
And that started when I was that little.
That's actually super interesting. I guess I'd never even tied that together too. I did the same thing. Yeah.
Weird. Cause my kid now we'll buy him a $40 die cast at a car show and he'll sling that thing around the yard. But mine was like in a display case on a wall.
Do you want to know something absolutely ridiculous?
What?
So I love those because it always fascinated me because they had so many details. You know what I mean? I had two of those when I was growing up. One of them was a burnt orange first generation Ford Explorer Sport Track.
What?
I do not know.
Did you pick that out or did your parents pick that out?
I have no idea. I have no memory
just showed up at your house
of the details. I just specifically remember because I used to like play with it too. You know what I mean? I don't remember how like young I was, but I just remember like specifically this fucking burnt orange Sport Track, and I'm like, of all the fucking cars, what the fuck? So I've honestly, there's been a little part of my brain waiting to say that on this podcast for some reason.
Someone's gonna find
it. Was my opportunity. There it was.
Somebody's gonna find one and be like, I'm gonna buy that for Matt, and that'll be really funny. In like 6 episodes time, we're like, hey, somebody actually bought an Explorer.
If you buy it and you just want to like give it to me, that would be awesome, and I'd be very appreciative. I would turn around and get lowering equipment with the money for selling it. And it wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't turn around and flip it. I wouldn't turn around and flip it because fuck you, because it's the opposite of that. You went and got me a burnt orange Ford Explorer, a Sport Track, but you know, I want to lower the TSX more than I want to drive a burnt orange Ford Explorer.
Okay, so from die-cast stuff and that kind of piquing your interest and just like having a natural thing for taking care of stuff, when did you actually start like noticing cars or like seeing that, you know, modifying cars was a thing? Like when did your brain like catch onto that? Did you have a driver's license at that point?
No, I was always headed in that direction since I was little from those die-cast cars. And I had this weird thing that I kind of took pride in as a kid where I would kind of know what vehicle something, what a car was just by it driving down the street. And yeah, I was able to call out the make and model of it at
I think eight, 10 years old. Yeah.
And it was just this weird thing that I just took pride in as a kid. And I thought was super cool to myself.
Yeah.
Just being able to, low key, it is pretty fun.
Yeah,
just
cool.
Just by seeing a tail light or something like that, like you could specify what that car was.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of how I grew into that stuff. And obviously, New York is a great place to get into the car scene.
Is it? I'm very curious about that.
I was actually about to pair it
because you say
said,
that, and then like, I'm like, do people actually like drive in New York? Like people that live like where you live? You lived in the Bronx,
right?
Like, did your family have a car?
That's actually a really good question. We always had one vehicle as a family. Mm-hmm. We're a family, me, my dad, and my two other brothers. We had one car. Most of the stuff we did didn't require a vehicle, but my parents worked outside of the city at times. So they needed a vehicle to get to where they needed to go for work. Mm. But we, as far as us kids, we took public transportation for everything, bus, trains, we did have a vehicle. It definitely wasn't driven a whole lot, but we had
fair
one.
Enough. Yeah. I mean, just from, you know, outside perspective looking in, like anytime I've been to New York, I'm like, fuck this. I'd never drive here. Yeah, it'd be awful.
There's tons of people that don't own vehicles.
Yeah.
And if it's something that you can get away with, then
the public transport is so good. Like the subway systems are incredible. That's one of my favorite things about both London and New York is just being able to get around so easy.
Oh yeah. And it's nothing for anyone. I mean, even us as kids, we did that kind of stuff on our own.
Yeah.
We didn't need parents to get on the bus to go to school or, you know, anything like that. We just kind of did it on our own.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like a lot of kids grow up a lot earlier in places like that. Cause you have to just figure it out. You're like, you need to get to school. Go find what fucking train or bus you need to get on.
It's crazy to think, especially now living here where it's kind of normal because you have no public transportation.
Right.
And parents think they have to be with their kids for everything.
Right, right.
And then me thinking back being, you know, 8 years old, me and my little brother walking to public school in the middle of the Bronx by ourselves for like a mile.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
right. So did you get your driver's license like right when you, is it 16 in New York?
Yes.
What's the age?
Yeah, I did get my driver's license at 16. Uh-huh.
What was your first car?
So my first car I didn't own until a couple of years later. I would just drive my dad's car, obviously money wise.
Which I mean, a lot of people do. I kind of did the same thing.
Right.
Too.
My first car was actually a 1999 Mitsubishi Eclipse.
Okay.
Fuck yeah. Especially at that time, that shit was the move.
Yeah. So that was my first vehicle. Wasn't really what I was looking for. It was still cool because of the time that I grew up in was, especially in the car scene, was a big tuner.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was right in the middle of like Fast and Furious movies.
Actually,
and
even
that
before that was, I sound super old right now.
Okay. Let's put it out. How old are you?
I can't even remember how old I was, but when I finally got into the point of being around modified vehicles, was back when, which I think it's still around, not as, they don't have as many shows nowadays, but Hot Import Nights.
Okay. Yeah.
HIN. That was a big thing back then, back when that Fast and the Furious styling was already big, but that movie was nowhere near.
I mean, the Eclipse makes sense for
Eclipse,
right at that
Civics,
time.
And that was a big thing in New York too. Was,
were you modifying that thing as soon as you got it, or was it just you drove that around point A to point B?
Yeah, it was modified pretty much as soon as I got it. That's something I was always planning on doing.
Yeah,
obviously at whatever age I was definitely broke at that time, so it was more of a lowering springs, wheels, exhaust kind of. Clean the car up a little bit.
Equipment.
Yeah. Oh yeah, lowering equipment. Kept a bottle of NyQuil in the box. But yeah, it was pretty simple. Which that's once we get into it, and people that do know me know that that's my style anyway. It's pretty simple and clean.
Definitely. Okay. So from there, what was really like your first car that was like a staple in how your or let's say, you know, what drove you in the direction of the your interest in cars now? Because you're big into VIP cars. You For sure. You know, the GS platform, I want to say, is like kind of your go-to,
right?
What led you towards that? Like, did towards you start
VIP style in general?
Yeah. What you know, what direction did you take from having, you know, an Eclipse to
right
to
that, that kind of import scene? Yeah, so that's kind of what I grew up in, and that's kind of the go-to in New York was the tuner scene. Mm-hmm. That was really big when I started getting into the car scene. But as far as VIP, the VIP scene and VIP culture and styling, obviously in 2008 is when Liberty VIP mm-hmm. Came out. And then I ran into some of the Infamous guys back before Infamous became a car group.
Yeah. Were they down in Atlanta or
what? They were down in Atlanta. Uh-huh. I was in Atlanta for Import Alliance.
Okay.
And that's back when Larry Young, which is still a big name in the VIP scene now.
He had was this when he had the Y33 that was Radius? Did. It was and that it, champagne
it was,
color?
It was nothing like that at the time.
Okay.
At that time, it was black. I'm assuming on coilovers at the time and wheels. That was about it.
Just so simple, like right up your street then.
Yeah, it was super simple back then.
Mm-hmm. What year was this? Is this, you're saying 08 or are you saying after 08?
I want to say this was definitely after 08.
Okay.
Because I didn't live in New York at the time. That's after I moved down to Tennessee.
Which, what was the reason for the move down this direction? It's
not car related at all. It was for school.
Yeah.
So when I was applying for colleges and all that stuff, I ended up finding a school down here in Cleveland and ended up moving down here just away from anything.
Didn't just have liked any, it here. So you ended up saying,
no family.
This is a really loaded question, but what's better, Tennessee or New York?
New York, hands down, is better. Okay. Would I ever move back? That's the question I always get. No. I would never move back. Chattanooga specifically is actually a really good kind of middle ground.
See, that's what I was thinking coming from Atlanta.
Yeah, like, it's
what do you think about Chattanooga that makes it a middle ground for New York?
Okay, so I guess coming from New York, and I don't know if it might be different coming from Atlanta because are close.
One thing really quick, and this has nothing. No, I'm just, I feel the necessity. It's what I fucking said on Twitter because I'm going to hold myself to that.
What?
I have to say the Atlanta area now. Because people from like Atlanta get really pissed if you're not from like Atlanta, so you're Atlanta area is just, yes. I'm saying that to them, not you. Anyway, yeah. Continue. very sorry. I just need to get that out there.
No, you're fine. So like I said, coming from New York, you have a certain idea of what the South is. Mm-hmm. You just think of, you know, your country road. Backwood, redneck kind of
bunch
thing.
Bunch of fucking racists and trucks exactly. and shit. That's, yeah. Which,
I was going to say, there are plenty of racists and trucks.
Yeah. To an extent, it's here.
Not going to say it's not here.
Yeah.
But coming down to this area, you realized it was something a little different. Mm-hmm. And yes. it still kind of has that city vibe without you just being in the middle of nowhere.
That is exactly,
and that's what I didn't want. I'm not a person that lives in the middle of nowhere. I have to be around things.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I felt about Chattanooga. I think that like the first time that I'd visited, which was for Riverside, downtown just felt like it was a big city, but it didn't come with all the inconveniences right. of a big city. Like it wasn't, you know, really disgusting down there. It wasn't crazy, crazy traffic. It wasn't super difficult to park, which, yeah, it does have all of those things, but it's nowhere near as bad.
My
as,
like, favorite thing city. When I moved here, by and large, was like the pace of life. It doesn't, because like you said, it's not in the middle of nowhere. It's not like the pace of life is like, oh my God, like what? There's nothing to do here.
It's a little bit but slower.
It's slower. Like it was a really, really comfortable transition for me moving up here from there, just because it's just like it's noticeably slower. Yeah,
you're not bored out of your mind.
Exactly.
But anyway, so you move down south, mm-hmm. and your first kind of taste of VIP culture is
Import Alliance, yeah.
Seeing those, Larry's car.
Y33s. I don't think there was really many VIP cars. It's now getting pretty big now. But
yeah.
That wasn't really what you saw.
And so you weren't familiar with any of the stuff that was in New York at the time, or like, was it maybe after you'd been exposed to that, then you'd start to notice some of the guys that were up in that part of the country?
So it's stuff that I noticed when I was in New York. Mm-hmm. That was my first like taste of it in person, I guess,
sure,
I would say. Obviously I didn't know any of the Liberty guys back then or anything like that. But yeah, seeing that Y33 was kind of what.
And what was it about that car specifically that like drew you in? Because I have like a really, my affinity for VIP cars is like, it's a different feeling seeing pictures of them, mm-hmm. but it's a presence.
That's exactly the word I was thinking.
Yeah, like 100%. When I'm in the presence of something, and I always talk about it with my car too, is like, yeah, obviously it's not done, but like when I'm in the presence of my car, it gives me that feeling like this thing's fucking huge. And just like seeing a car that big, and it has this just gangster feel to it. Like it shouldn't be able to move, and it does. And it just looks hard.
It definitely does. And I've always been one to kind of lean towards chassis that or cars that aren't really done too often.
Yeah.
And back then, VIP cars weren't. So as soon as
right, you could jump on any platform,
and you're talking about being in the middle of Import Alliance,
right,
with a bunch of,
you mixed in with tuner Hondas, cars, yeah, all of the regular tuner scene cars.
So that automatically drew me in, just being how I am with the cars that draw my attention. So that's kind of where that love started growing.
Mm-hmm. And so from there, how long was it after seeing and being exposed to VIP culture for the first time, how long after that was it until you picked up a chassis and that was like the direction you were going?
It took a while. I built a couple, probably, I don't even want to say a couple. It might've just been one car before I even bought a chassis that I considered to be VIP.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how many years it actually was. It was, I would say probably 5 years or so.
Okay.
And that's still with me being exposed to that and learning everything I could.
Yeah. I was gonna say that's probably the big chunk of it, or at least it was for me.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't just something I was like, I want that, went and bought one and started from there.
Right.
It was me building cars that weren't VIP while still gaining all that knowledge.
Right. And I'm assuming just because of how your style is and that you like simple and clean cars, mm-hmm. some of the cars that you were building may have been kind of tailored more towards that direction. Or what were you building at that time before that?
What I ended up after having that Eclipse was a G35 coupe.
Okay.
So not VIP, obviously still considered a luxury vehicle, mm-hmm. at the time. I don't remember what year it was.
It is always funny to think of those as a luxury car.
Yeah, back then, yeah.
Well, that's what's so fucked up is, I mean, like, honestly, like they were and they are. They've just been so like trash canned by absolute clowns. Like, it's hard to see them.
Don't call Lucas a clown
in that same way. No, you both knew exactly what I was talking about.
VQ,
but like,
boys.
No, well, and it's like, that's the thing too. VQs are great engines, and when you have good exhaust on them, they sound fucking incredible.
Yeah.
That's just the key, is the good exhaust, as opposed to just,
don't even
straight,
make the noise. Don't do
straight
it.
Piping it with a bubble tune. Yeah. Looking at you guys.
Yeah, it's different now. And that G35 was super clean. Like I said, that's my style. So,
that feels like a pretty good middle ground, though, honestly. Kind of transitioning from like where you were at into VIP cars. Because that's kind of, honestly, not for nothing, that's kind of what we were talking about. It was just, for example, with the TSX, where it's kind of like you have like this equal, like, sportiness, refined kind of deal. It's not completely in one direction or the other. So
right.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And so how was your G35 set up then? Was it like a simple coilovers and wheels?
It was just like that's like I said, I'm a pretty simple person. It had lip kit on it, wheels, mm-hmm. nothing special. It was on reps at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we all start somewhere.
Oh, absolutely.
And it had a really good name brand exhaust from Japan, so it sounded pretty good.
That's all I need to know. You're good. Yeah. You're good.
Yeah. It wasn't straight pipe. That's all I need to know. Yeah. But yeah, it was pretty simple, and I had that for a couple of years. Still, actually, my next vehicle wasn't even a VIP car at that point either. I had a, which I don't even know if you remember it.
What?
I had a 2011 Scion TC.
I do remember that was actually.
Cement gray, and it was fagged. That's
kind of, as a matter of fact, that's the car that you had when we first met.
This is the first I'm hearing.
Yeah.
It was fucking sweet, dude.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. That's so weird because I just totally forgot about that because now you've had like VIP chassis for so long. Yeah, that thing was fucking killer.
I think
dude. People
think of a certain vehicle or couple of vehicles when they think
associate
of me, I guess.
People with a car.
Yeah, but that's what I had. Yeah, I had it was like a newer gen Scion TC. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I started to, weirdly enough, it opposite direction of the G35, but that's where I started to add those VIP styling touches to it.
Okay.
Wheels and all that stuff. I started, you know, building my own 3-piece wheels, all that stuff. That's kind of the
car that you probably experimented on.
I experiment on it.
I'm so sorry. As a total aside, I was looking at a newer gen TC, and you looked at the car all the time, so you probably noticed. Those headlights are not like the exact same, but those headlights look so much like the Mark X headlights.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When it like connected in my brain, I was like, that is so fucking cool.
Yeah, I think that's at the point where Toyota probably started doing a lot more modern styling. Because even if you look at, say, my GS, my newer GS that's outside, that it has that look,
yeah,
where it looks a lot like the Mark X. And
yeah, I should not have interrupted you to say that, but like I just saw one in traffic the other day because I mean, honestly, like I was not big on the first gens, like I'll just be upfront with you, but like the second gens were honestly pretty slept on. Like I think the body lines are really hit or miss for a lot of people just because the C-pillar goes back really far, but like especially the ones that came with like TRD kits and shit, they're cool. Yeah. And so once I like connected that they have like Mark X looking headlights, I'm like, fuck, I'm sold now.
Yeah, mine actually had, I had a TRD kit on my non-TRD TC. But yeah, that's where I went to kind of experiment on vehicles.
And then after that came the first generation GS?
So after that came the first generation GS. I started finally looking at platforms that I could build in that VIP style. And I didn't before just because it was me trying to kind of have a middle ground of a car that I could modify that was still a good daily because it was my only vehicle.
And also, I don't know how old you were at the time, but like when you're young, you kind of lean a little bit more towards like, what can I get that's going to be really fun to drive? Mm-hmm. So I feel like the TC probably ticked a little bit more boxes.
I mean, it wasn't really fun to drive, but like I said, it was that middle ground of like, I need something reliable.
Yeah.
That I can, like I said, it was my only vehicle. I've only ever had one vehicle at a time until I got that GS. But like I said, I just want to make sure I had something that I can modify that I could still drive every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't going to break down on me all the time. And obviously the VIP chassis were a little older. That's my explanation as to why I didn't start from the jump.
Yeah. Yeah. But even in that, the first generation GS or Aristo mm-hmm. is still an underrated chassis.
It definitely even today. Is. That car is ugly.
I don't even think it is.
I don't think it is. It looks really spaceshipy.
It's a weird shape.
For me personally, that's kind of like my style. So maybe my bias just completely disqualifies me from saying.
And I think that's what drew it to me like, as well. Like I said, I'm drawn to cars that are out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if we're bringing it back to the whole New York thing, that was a staple chassis for a lot of rappers was that, you know, 147 chassis.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And well, I think that the second generation GS is like, far and beyond way uglier than the first gen. And
Which one's the second gen?
With the circle headlights. Oh, okay. The one like that the looks
four,
like fucking yeah.
headlights in the front.
The one you that looks like ugly? It looks like Stitch from Lilo and Stitch.
It does.
Yo, I don't think they're ugly, but I can kind of see what you're saying.
I really like the chassis. Yes, I think that they're ugly, like speaking objectively. Like if you're like, explain why this is beautiful, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
But it though, like the potential that those have is insane. Like there's so much aftermarket support for second gen GSs. Well,
that's what's funny is like the first gen, it's like I said, it's just like really spaceship looking.
It
like
it's like, well, it was like, designed differently. So that first gen GS was designed in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was designed on kind of being like those Italian cars.
Well, it's a lot more rounded and smooth.
That's why I think it looks different than what you're used to as far as looking at a Japanese vehicle.
Yeah. But I mean, it's kind of similar to how the Majesta is. Mm-hmm. It's that bubbly shape, very smooth. And that's just kind of the direction that they were in that era.
It's still so weird to me that they're on the same chassis, but they're so different in size.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, so you got the first generation GS. Right. Was it black?
It was black.
Okay.
I knew that was the chassis that I wanted to build for my first VIP car. So I did a search. Obviously, those things, if anybody's looked for one, they're extremely rare.
Yeah, just finding the car is hard enough as it is. Yeah,
and if you do find one, they're probably trashed.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to obviously have a good base for a vehicle. I ended up finding that car in Ohio, and called the dealership up. I was at work at the time and pretty much haggled on price as much as I could and bought a plane ticket at the same time. I got off the phone with them, bought a plane ticket. The next day I was at Chattanooga Airport and flew to Ohio.
Hell yeah.
The car didn't look anything like it did in the pictures, of course.
And where did you go with it? Like, did you end up having to collect parts for it for a while before you could really do anything? Or was it something where you'd already planned for that ahead of time?
I did not plan as far as like stacking any parts beforehand. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people do that, and it's
kind of really necessary for some of these chassis because it's so hard to.
It definitely is. Weirdly enough, I spoke to another guy that's in the VIP car scene that's stacking parts for a 430 that he doesn't own.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. But no, I didn't stack any parts. But I did start from the get-go, pretty much I started with exhaust work on that vehicle.
Yeah.
Just because I knew what my plan was to build pretty much what you would expect to see in Japan as far as a VIP static cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
So my first step was tucking exhaust, all that stuff to make sure that once I did lower it, obviously we all know it's hard to find places that will do work on cars that's lowered, especially stuff like exhaust. So
that's surprising because a lot of people, their initial take to building a car is like, okay, I just need to make it look good. Yours is, I need to prepare it for it to be able to drive when it looks good, which in my eyes is really the approach you need to be taking on some of these cars. Yeah,
you know everything about that.
Yeah, you really do have to prep these cars because they're big. They're huge cars, and like you said, a lot of shops don't ever want to work on them, and exhaust work is not something that is that accessible for just anybody to do unless you're good at welding.
Yeah, so that's pretty much where it started, just the kind of the bare bones, prepare for everything.
Mm-hmm.
As I already had that vision in my head of what I wanted. And it just went from there. I mean, I pretty much built that car on the side of the road. That car didn't fit in my driveway.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get it up the driveway, had no garage. It was literally a street built car.
I feel that.
On the side of the road with jacks and jack stands and tools, cars flying by you.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's how that car was built.
A lot of us can relate to that. Yeah. I mean, I started on this thing in a gravel driveway, and I couldn't tell you how many times that thing fell off the jack and almost killed me. People get on my ass on YouTube comments all the time. They're like, don't put your legs under the car while you have it jacked up. I'm like, you should see some of the shit I've done with this thing.
It's happened to me a few times with that first gen.
Yeah. Would it be like that? And humble beginnings. And where did that car go? Because you built it a certain way, and then it got to a point and you got rid of the car.
Disappeared. So that car, when it got to the point, it actually didn't even get to the point where I wanted it to, but I mean the car ended up, it had a kit on it, it had the wheels I wanted on it.
You had the Ordens, right?
I had Ordens on it. But I was on a Facebook group on, I'm pretty sure it was the JZS147 Facebook group. And someone had listed an Aristo, same chassis as mine, the 147 first gen. And instantly started talking to him through Messenger and worked out a deal. And I knew I couldn't have both.
Yeah.
I didn't want both at that point. As much as I would have liked to keep them. So I knew everything off my car could transfer
basically
over to that vehicle.
Just switch it over and
same exact vehicle.
At that point, you know, the amount of stuff that you'd done to the car, had you really done anything that was like crazy, like fab work that you didn't want to like replicate on the other car? It was just like more simple, like bolt on stuff that you knew that obviously you had a plan that you were going to get more in depth. And is that why you switched over to the Aristo?
Right. There was definitely no crazy body work or anything like that. The kit is somewhat custom made, because of a lot of the Japanese lip kits and stuff like that won't bolt up to USDM bumpers.
I didn't even think about
all that
yeah.
stuff. Same thing with, I think the Y33 is the same way. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, have SEMA front ends and all that stuff. So that kit was all custom made,
to fit bumpers.
The US bumper. I did have a JDM front on the vehicle.
Okay.
Size skirts were made to fit the car. The rear walled lip was made to fit the USDM. The rear bumpers on those Aristos are extremely hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
So actually our buddy, Andy Bailey.
Yeah.
He's the one that, you know, cut that thing up into probably 60 pieces.
Was he helping you work on the GS
he
before
was.
You got the Aristo?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I had my vision for the car. He helped me execute it. The car was still original paint. And actually, our other buddy, Finkel, is the one that detailed that car.
Yeah.
Had like 40 hours into
yeah.
paint correction on that car. But yeah, so everything I knew could move over. I even went as far as taking, getting a USDM bumper to put on my Aristo.
Okay. So that you could then
so I didn't
use
have
that
to
lip.
Then backtrack and
gotcha.
Recut everything up.
Which I mean that kind of makes it unique, especially for any of the guys like in Japan, which is I feel like this is becoming more of a thing, but the guys in Japan, you know how like we're like, yeah, you know, if you have the same chassis yeah. over there, everyone's like, yeah, I need to
they're
get
the
like
the same way with USDM.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, I need to get a SEMA bumper over here. They're like, I want a Q45 bumper
yeah.
because it's just cool because it's from somewhere else. So I'm sure that like had some kind of points with Japanese people. They're
right.
like, oh, it's got a US bumper with, you know, a Japanese
yeah,
no. lip. And
oh, no, you go ahead.
Well, no, I've always appreciated, well, if anything, I've always thought that was funny how there's like that back and forth, how we want their shit and they want our shit. And it was like the one time that just like made me laugh really hard was when I still had the Impreza and I followed this dude in Japan that had an Impreza because I loved it. And he made a post one day. He had gotten some USDM mirrors that say objects may be closer than they appear. He was freaking out, dude. He was so excited.
He was just like, it has American words.
He was so excited. And I was like, that's so funny. And then I thought about us, like, we act the exact same.
We're like,
if it's got Japanese on it.
Yeah. That is so funny.
Yeah,
which we can do a whole episode on like the cross contamination of cultures. Mm-hmm. But no, that's really cool that you kind of did that retrofit with.
Speaking of that stuff, after I had started building that GS, one of the Liberty Japan guys, which it's crazy to say that you speak to these guys all the time and you don't have that language barrier.
Yeah.
He ended up buying a first gen GS because of me building that one.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is way cooler than mine.
Let's get into that because Liberty VIP is something that's always been, you know, interesting to me. And I've like followed and seen stuff in forums for years. Like, yeah. I mean, I've been looking around and trying to absorb stuff for the better part of like maybe 8 to 10 years with VIP stuff.
Right.
And yeah, Liberty VIP is just something that just keeps coming back up. And I've spoken to a few guys that are like part of it, obviously you. What is Liberty VIP first and foremost?
I would say
don't feel like you have to speak for them, just objectively.
No,
like
no,
I'm
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
Out of curiosity, I've never asked that question.
To us, we're a family, which I think a lot of car clubs either have or don't have, and a lot of them nowadays don't have.
Yeah.
I was brought in there and felt like family instantly.
Yeah.
Like I've known these guys for years. But we're just a car club started in New York and Philly. So that Liberty kind of goes on both sides, Statue of Liberty, Liberty Bell,
of course.
But now we're everywhere. That's where it began. And the guys that I interact with a lot are guys in the Southeast.
Sure. Yeah. And it's primarily East Coast. I know that there's guys kind of all over the US.
Yeah, we do have a lot of guys and all over. There is just as much presence that we have here on the West Coast in California.
Yeah.
And then in between, you know, in Texas, we actually had some Texas guys come out to Riverside.
Yeah.
And actually a bunch of New York guys flew down and drove down.
Sultan Status.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I didn't get to see his car up close last year and I'm so mad about it, but his Y34 is that ridiculous.
Thing
is,
yeah, it's
and
crazy.
For context for you guys listening, it is a burgundy Y34. It's had a bunch of bodywork stuff. Like, I don't remember what kit is on it, but doesn't it have like most of the body lines deleted from it or something along those lines? And then the big feature is the suicide doors, which, you know, I've seen suicide door conversions done and like hacked up or whatever. This is done so right. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, relocating the door handles, everything. Everything
looks
was redone.
Factory. And that is what this shit is all about. Like for me, I don't know what your take is. I'm assuming it's probably fairly similar to how my, take on VIP culture is that like simple cars, just like it's tasteful bodywork and you know, it's not trying to go all out and do something that's just gonna like blow people's minds or like catch people's attention. It'll blow your mind when you notice it.
We will notice it. A lot of people don't.
Yeah, it's a lot of the guys that are just like involved with the culture that will pick up on these little details, and most people will just be like, oh, that thing's cool, and then that's that. But I guess I should ask, you know, to you, what is a VIP car? Cause this is a question that is, you know, it's thrown around the internet a lot and there's obviously so many different takes and people will dive into the history. But for you, like in general terms, what do you think makes a VIP car?
Obviously you got to start with the chassis.
Mm-hmm.
To me, just because you own a VIP chassis does not mean you own a VIP car.
Mm-hmm.
There is a difference. And it has to be built a certain way. We all have the same kind of goals with our vehicles. You have to be low, wide wheels, you know, great fitment, all that stuff. But it's just, there's a different level to it when it comes to VIP cars. There's no half-assing anything. Everything just has to be pretty much perfect. Legit parts. Body work, but I mean, I'm not even one for body work to begin with.
Right. Anyway, I don't think that, you know, it's not a list where there's boxes that need to be ticked.
That's why it's hard to explain.
You can't ever be like, okay, this is a VIP car, because then, you know, something else that could fall into that category doesn't, because it doesn't tick one of the boxes, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I feel like there's a lot of different approaches to it, but the general consensus is, you know, obviously low, aggressive fitment, you know, wide wheels, and there's different takes, and I think that the VIP style is obviously where it then differs off to different chassis that aren't a VIP chassis. Right. And I mean, you can explain, you know, what cars are VIP chassis traditionally.
So we're talking obviously big body cars, LS400, Y33, obviously 430s, LS460s. Then we go into the Crowns, the Majestas, those kind of vehicles. A lot of the GS kind of draws a line.
Because it's a smaller vehicle, but it fits the similar category.
And it definitely does. And I think it's finally become the point where it, it is considered a VIP chassis. Definitely, I don't think it was back then. But that's where it starts. And a lot of people, even things like wheels are changing nowadays with VIP style cars. It used to be, you know, we all know the when you think of a VIP wheel, you think of like the Euroline, like the classic.
Yeah, big, like big full face wheels.
Yeah, and even that's changing now.
Yeah. I think that the culture is, especially right now, I feel like it's starting to make, I don't want to say like a comeback. I mean, it sounds weird me saying anything on it because I'm the new kid on the block. Like I'm, you know, I'm very new to this and I've just been absorbing the culture and observing it for a long time. I'm only now really like dipping my feet into it.
Well, I feel like basing it just off the bazillions of YouTube videos that you and I have watched at like 1 a.m, like the OG 90s VIP is kind of circling back around.
Yeah, like it's like starting to become a thing that's, it's not like a trend, but it's starting to become more popular.
It is getting more popular. And those, I mean, these cars are getting extremely cheap. Maybe not nowadays now, and inflation's crazy.
Yeah, some of the prices are going up.
Cars are getting cheap. And that's kind of where, like I said, just because you own a VIP chassis doesn't mean you own a VIP car. Like I said, you can't half-ass stuff. And that's kind of where you draw the line as far as you can own an LS400, but you have to take that right direction for it to be a VIP car.
And I think a lot of people directly relate interior modifications to VIP cars. They're like, oh, does it have tray tables? Yep. Does it have curtains? Does it have neck pads? Right. Which I don't even associate that stuff with VIP culture as much anymore. And that's not
my styling at all.
Yeah.
It's never really been.
I don't even know where the curtains thing came from. I know that a lot of the cars like Celsius, the Majesta, like they came with factory options to get curtains. And I don't know if it was like an offshoot of that where people were like, oh, I want curtains.
I wouldn't say I know exactly. I would say that's probably where it drew inspiration from.
Yeah.
Obviously Junction Produce is pretty much the originator of VIP culture.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And those are the products they sell. So I would say that's probably why people's go-to are the curtains and the trays and, you know, the Sunas and the Fusas.
Yep.
All that stuff. I feel like at this point for me, it's almost like pick one or two. This is for me.
Mm.
But it's kind of like pick one or two and just leave it alone.
When you say pick one or two, you
like don't
say
like, go create. Don't.
Yeah. Like yeah. if pick one or two, like Junction Produce, either products or like, so it's like, if you want to have like curtains and a Suna, great. If you want to have like a Suna and a tray, great.
Right.
But don't have like a Suna, a tray, back tray.
There are a lot of people that have the full Junction Produce line in their vehicle.
It's like for me, just as an individual, like that becomes too much.
I have a similar take on that too. Like I've definitely, just from being around and like seeing stuff, my approach to like doing interior has always been like, is this actually usable? Like, I think that there is a level where you just start like mounting things in there and accessories where it's just like, all right, this is excessive. Like nobody that would actually ride in the back of this would use it. And when I worked with Pure Luxury to build the tray tables for my car on its like previous setup, he had a template for how he would lay out like the rear tray in most cars. And I looked at it and I was like, well, if I'm sitting in the back, the point of that center console is that I'm going to rest my arm on it. I want to make sure that like my arm can rest and like I could put my hand on a drink that's right there. Like it ergonomically makes sense. He's like, you know what? I hadn't thought about it like that. And I was like, I mean, I just want it to make sense. If someone sits in there, I don't want it to be like, oh, yeah, this is how I get my fucking bottle of Ciroc. Like I was like,
at some point it's just an attention grabber.
You know? Yeah. And they're really cool. Like there's a lot of these guys that do really, really crazy interior stuff. Just my take has always been try to keep like it somewhat
that's
simple.
That's our style. If that's your style, that's great.
Yeah. None of it's like right or wrong. It's like, hey, if you have too many tray tables, it's not a VIP car.
Well, see, and what's like, funny though, because you mentioned it, like, again, for me, it's on the completely other side of the spectrum. Like, if you have basically a whole catalog of shit,
I mean, that makes it pretty cool.
All of a sudden, I'm interested again because, like, you took the time and pursued the whole catalog. You know what I mean?
No, I definitely agree with that, especially with like a Junction Produce thing, too, just because they have offered so many different products over the years. Mm-hmm. which Liz's car has that Hello Kitty
Junction Produce Hello Kitty. Is that air freshener?
Is that a real thing? Like it's Hello legit. Kitty collab.
Yeah, it's on the back and everything. It says Junction Produce. Hello Kitty.
I'm just like I want to see the email exchange from them being like, "Hey, we want to do a Hello Kitty collab." Just that. What a strange thing. That's just.
I have no idea where that originated from, but I mean, yeah, they have Hello Kitty dolls and everything. Black Hello Kitty dolls. I mean,
it's nuts. It's wild. Yeah. But it really does give a perspective to how big VIP culture was in Japan, like back in the early 2000s or the late 90s.
Right.
Like these cars back then were brand new. They were really expensive. And I mean, me and Matt will sit down and watch videos from these car meets, and these were meets. They weren't shows.
I think that's what's so cool about like that style back then is they were brand new, but like in the way that they styled them, that was taken into account. They were never like obscenely low. Like
no,
they filled the arches with bigger wheels. Like, so, you know, you had these brand new cars, but they weren't like, yeah, it's brand new, but let's just go destroy it. It's like, no, let's make it look good, and we can fill that wheel arch that a lot of people now will fill with being low.
Yeah.
With just like 19, 20, 21. And they still had to be usable back then. Exactly. I mean, exactly.
If people ever look into that, like origins of VIP cars, I mean, they were essentially used by the Yakuza.
Yeah. That's something that has been. It's been a little bit back and forth, at least from what I've heard in my like research into it. And this is why I've never done like an episode on like VIP culture, because I never want to be like, okay, this is where it came from, blah, blah, blah. I've definitely had quite a few people correct me on the Yakuza thing, because I've said it in a video before. I've been like, yeah, originally it was like the Yakuza wanted to do this. But I think that there's a bunch of different offshoots that it has evolved into what the culture is. But yeah, I think the Yakuza did play a part in that. That like
I think
they wanted cars that weren't super flashy and they could still express themselves with.
That was the thing that I've heard is like, but and honestly, this story that I've heard puts Junction Produce in like an even bigger role because it sounds like the Yakuza were like changing it up, and so they wanted like the more like low key executive sedans or whatever. So they were doing that, but they weren't very much, if at all, it sounds like modifying them. Mm-hmm. But at that point, like these early VIP companies, I don't know if it like Junction Produce was like the first one, but obviously that's the first name that we all think of. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for that. But I think at that point, that's when that style started to develop, because all of a sudden it goes from like, oh, Yakuza's in there. They're gangsters, that's gangsters.
Which goes right back to the start of this conversation.
And then that's when they moved in to start modifying them. And then from there, I feel like it started growing.
Talking about, you know, my influences on my attraction to VIP cars.
There it is, that full circle moment.
Exactly. It's hip-hop and rap videos. Yeah, I like that, like, gangster appeal, that feeling of it. And it's not because I want to act like I'm hard or I want to kill people or whatever. It's just, it's that emotion that it gives you is fucking dope. And I think that maybe that's how it was back then, too, was that they saw, you know, a certain demographic of people that are, like, associated with stuff that's cool. And then it just takes over. It's like, all right, I want to do that. And
I'm just sitting here imagining you in the LS, like, man, I'm driving the LS. I'm listening to Gangstar. I'm in the mood to kill somebody right now.
That would be the worst car to kill anybody in. I'd fucking like put a gun out the window and drop it.
That's good. Well, then you couldn't get away. Like, you do it, and then you get beached on somebody. You start having to run.
Oh, my God. Guy's rolling around on the floor because I just put a bullet through his leg because I missed, and then I'm pulling boards out to try and get my car unstuck. Yeah, it just wouldn't work.
Honestly, this is interesting. So it had nothing to do with VIP. It actually had to do with like Kaido and like Buses Oku and shit. But in our Discord, there was a post that was correction of something I said, which I was just so excited about that. Somebody corrected me about something that I like thought I knew. And he was able to be like, hey man, this is actually what happened. And I have sources. Mm. Right. And so, but it's interesting because like, that's something that I'm interested in, like being more adept at, is kind of like being able to look into stuff like the stories of the origins of the right. various subcultures in Japan, but be able to like cross-reference shit. Because yeah. it's like, what was super weird about that thing happening with the, with, you know, his explanation is I thought about it for a little too long and I'm like, how do we know the story for anything? But it's like with the VIP stuff, like chronologically, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. it, the fact of the matter is it did absolutely start like at least adjacently with what the Yakuza were doing. Right. Mm-hmm. And then it grew from there.
No, it's definitely there's definitely an interesting part of history just to do with all of it that I'm, you know, if there is anybody out there that would consider themselves, you know, a history buff or knows a lot more on the subject, I would be really interested to pick somebody's brain and maybe even have somebody on the episode where we can specifically talk about the history of VIP culture. But I do want to bring it back to, you know, more nowadays and some of the stuff that you have going on. You mentioned a little bit about wheels, about mm-hmm. how the direction has changed. You know, back in the day, it was more, you know, full face, the fat five spokes. What kind of direction do you think it has gone in now? And like, what kind of wheels are you seeing on cars that fit, that make sense for VIP chassis now?
Right. It's kind of taken the direction. And I think it's also still, it's still obviously we always in, inspired by stuff that's going on in Japan. Mm-hmm. And even a lot of the wheel brands, designs that they make now is more of a sportier wheel, I guess I would call it.
Yeah. More motorsports for inspired. Instance,
like the wheels I had on, you know, I started on my GS, made its way over to the Aristo was the SSR CB04s. Mm-hmm. Pretty God, sporty wheel. Wheels. I still miss them.
Yeah.
Actually a guy like 30 minutes from here owns them now.
I think, Who did I talk to? I know I shot his brother's car because his brother has Koffel's old LS. I shot it. It's on a RC350 now. Yeah, yep. I was talking to him about the wheels while I was shooting, and I was like, man, I love these wheels.
Yeah, thing is,
I got them from Lucas. I was like, damn, those are
yeah,
sick.
Yeah, I weirdly enough, the first wheels those that car that. The first car those wheels were test fitted on was a black RC350. That was my daily back then.
They just make sense. Yeah. You know, it's like Tiedemann's go-to wheel. But yeah, they look so good on
You're
like
totally right. I hadn't really like registered yeah. that. They really are kind of leaning into the more like subtle motors.
They definitely stuff. Are. It's
more spokes. It like just in seems
a lot of
work,
in
man.
A lot of like catalogs and stuff. It didn't really connect for me until. You
and the
said
crazy
that.
Thing is, it doesn't take anything away from
right.
that car being a VIP.
No,
car.
Not at all. And especially like one of the things that I think is a part of VIP stuff now is big brakes. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think it probably has been for a long time. Like, I don't know where the origins of putting absolutely ridiculous brakes on these cars come from. I think it's just it's like a flex thing. I think like the whole, you know. VIP cars has always been, it's like top tier. You got to do everything top tier. Okay, well, you don't want to have base model looking brakes on there.
Right.
Let's put eight pots all the way like, around.
I feel like it might be like an offshoot of, and we've all seen them. Like, I don't want to use like VIP, GT, whatever, because I'm not going to claim to know the terminology there, right? But, you know, we've all seen the scans from like old Japanese magazines where it's just like, Team whatever Majesta, like the first K-Brake Majesta, the mm-hmm. red, I don't remember what he named it, but like the red with the yellow pinstriping, mm-hmm. like that was kind of motorsport leaning, like yeah. before he like toned it down.
I think a and lot they of
had so, yeah, they had so much of that stuff going on where it was literally like, it's almost like they kind of took like the flares from Kaido mm-hmm. and just like toned them down enough, at least on most of the cars, they toned them down enough. And put them on VIP chassis. And then you have them where they get absolutely insane, where they're just like fucking molding this, molding that, doing different fucking front ends, like
yeah.
all this crazy stuff. And it's like, I feel like it could be argued that that stuff was kind of like, I feel like this might be like a continuation of that, but mm-hmm. melding in with like the VIP that we're used to. Could be way wrong, but like in my brain, that's where that connects.
Yeah, yeah. But no, it's definitely cool to see, you know, different takes and different approaches to the same chassis over the years. And VIP GT, as you mentioned, is kind of like, it's an off culture from VIP stuff. And I think there's a lot of it, like VIP style and all of these different, there's so many different like rabbit holes you can go down. It's like as my far favorite as VIP thing stuff
about Japanese car culture.
It's so interesting.
It's just like everything gets split and then split and then split, and it just gets cooler like the further down you go.
It really does. But yeah, going back to wheels, perfect tangent into our sponsor for the show, Wheel Price. They are an app. Basically, it's like a forum, classifieds for buying and selling wheels. And there's all kinds of stuff on there. Like a lot of the stuff that we've mentioned, if you are interested in full face wheels, you know, five spokes or any of the more motorsports related wheels, you can find any of that stuff on the app. And they are a great group of guys. You know, we have them on board as a sponsor because they're just like us. They're super down to earth enthusiasts that are interested in the culture, and they've been uploading some really cool like promo video stuff on their Instagram that's really interesting. Just interviewing, you know, owners of cars. So they are pretty good. They've got their little Snap-on wrench and just a mic on the end of it. Which shout out to Kyle. He commented on the last podcast. He was like, should we get a different mic set up? And I was just like, is it
absolutely not. He said that one forever.
I said, is it Snap-on? He said, yes. And I was like, no, keep it. You're good. You got a lifetime warranty. But no, super good group of guys. And we're excited to have them as a sponsor. So if you guys enjoy this show and you want to help support us, and go support them,
I'm not
going
to
download the app.
The whole time you were doing that, I was over here like, what can I do that's edgy? Because I'm behind the graphics right now.
Well, the last episode, you just like poked around it.
Well, see, that's the thing. Is my man is the focus right now. So I don't want to be like, But I was thinking about like flicking off the camera, but I'm like, they're not going to like that very much.
But no, go check out Wheel Price. Great group of guys. And the app's super intuitive, and you can find just about anything on there. And it's all over the world. So if you're looking for your next set of wheels, Wheel Price is the place to go. And if you're looking to sell a set of wheels, it's also the place to go. All the links are in the description. So yeah, go check them out and support them because they support us. But yeah, getting back to you, I want to talk more about the Aristo because I feel like we kind of dived off into some more offshoots, which that's always how it goes.
That's fine.
The Aristo, right. You got the Aristo and you begun the process of switching all of the parts over to the new chassis, which is the same chassis, just same the chassis, Japanese version. What did you change? What, you know, going from to the new chassis, what was then like the final image? What was the completed project?
Kit pretty much, it all stayed the same. Everything, obviously, when it went to the new chassis, all got repaired.
Yep.
It's all fiberglass.
And this was a walled lip kit?
It was a mixture. It was a walled Silk Blaze mix.
Okay. Yeah.
So it definitely wasn't all one brand.
I was going to say, Wald has like a very distinct style that I can pick up on. Mm-hmm. The front lip was Silk Blaze, wasn't it?
Yep.
Okay, good. Yep, I just had to test
and
myself.
And it still all flowed pretty nicely.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
It's an extremely hard chassis to find anything for.
Yeah.
Some of the parts were imported. Some were actually the rear lip, with how hard that rear lip is to find. Another guy that owned the chassis, I essentially just like overpaid immensely for that lip.
That's kind of how it goes.
He didn't want to sell it at all. He had no plans to sell it. I threw out offers. He denied it.
Yeah.
I threw out a bigger offer. Finally, he caved.
Yeah.
And that lip was mine. So that's everything went over to the new vehicle. Then just kind of started the process of refining everything. As far as brakes, little small details here and there.
And you did a LS460 front brake swap on that thing,
yeah,
right?
So actually I had a LS400 front brakes on the vehicle
first.
Which is
kind of the common swap because it's a bigger than stock upgrade, but it's really easy.
It's just bolts
on. Yeah.
Yeah, just minor modifications, bolts right onto the front. And then I did the LS460 front brake swap with ISF rotors.
Because the 460 is 5x120. I have no idea why they switch bolt pattern. But yeah, I guess the ISF rotors are the right size. And then the calipers for the 460 are huge.
Right.
And they look sick. So
and that required adapters up front that were custom made also. And then on the rear, I had Supra TT brakes, mm-hmm. Same rotors and everything, actually all still bolts on,
which is that, I think that's specific to the GS platform. Cause I don't think you can do the Supra twin turbo, rear brakes on the LS, or at least I haven't seen anybody do it. Yeah. I figured that there was a reason for it. But yeah, I thought about doing the 460s on the front of mine too, just because it's a common swap. It looks really good and it's obviously cheaper than getting, all these big brakes are insanely expensive. Like if you want to put like a full set of eight parts all the way around. And
trust me, I definitely inquired about the options.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke to, T-Demand and all that stuff. It's ridiculous.
T-Demand's probably a new level. Whatever everybody else is charging, T-Demand's probably like $4,000 more expensive.
Yeah, I think it was like $10,000 for a set of brakes or something like that. So.
Which, yeah, for, perspective, these are cars that are pretty useless because they have like an inch of contact mm-hmm. patch on the ground. And $10,000 in brakes.
I wasn't, doing any hard driving or anything like that.
Yeah.
So the 460 brakes are a really nice look.
It's a very good OEM Plus upgrade. It looks a lot better than stock. So what else on the car? You painted it.
The car Bailey did get painted. Andy Bailey painted the vehicle.
Yep.
I helped him with all the body work. That's the first time I'd done any body work on any kind of vehicle, but we had a timeline. We just worked together every day after work that we were in the shop, sanding that car, doing whatever we needed to do, pulling panels off of it. Every single piece came off that car, door handles, window frame, everything came off that vehicle.
Yep.
So that was the first time I actually put in that much work into a vehicle, even though I've always built all my vehicles myself.
Yeah.
That was definitely a new level, especially for an old man like me. building cars.
You're really
on the side
not
of the road.
That old. Come on.
See what you guys couldn't see was his canes over there leaning against the wall.
Yeah, right next to your NyQuil.
Uh-huh. Exactly. No, man, you're the one who's, man, you're a hard motherfucker for that. I'm never doing that ever again. I would rather drink just straight whiskey than that, honestly.
Yeah. So once you you had the car finished up, painted,
car came out of paint and it came out of Andy's shop the day of the pre-meet for Riverside.
Yeah. Year was this? Was this 2019?
I'm not good with years. It was
2020 is when it got rescheduled because of COVID.
I think it was 2020, right?
It was when Corona happened.
Yeah, oh, it was. Okay.
Yeah. So I remember that I don't remember who I was talking to, but you pulled up out in front of like wherever the fuck Bitter is and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh shit, it's Lucas's car. I was like, oh shit, it is. I haven't seen
it.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, you're right. Cause I remember seeing it on the street and being like, man, it's so cool to see this in person.
Straight from the shop, straight to the pre-meet.
Cause I remember distinctly seeing the car at Simply Clean. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I drove that car all the way to Simply Clean. It was like 9 hours or something like that.
Yeah. And that was before or after it gotten repainted?
That was before it got painted.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, and it was. So, did you change the color, or was it the same color?
It was the exact same color.
And it's like a kind of a green. I don't know how to describe it. Yeah, do you have a paint code or whatever it's called?
Yeah, I don't remember what the paint code was. It's like a green kind of jade metallic kind of.
It's got some blue in there.
Yeah, it's a weird color, but it was really pretty, and I didn't.
Oh, absolutely.
I wasn't going into the, because of our deadline, into the whole painting of the jams and stuff. I didn't want to have a color.
Yeah.
Two different colors. In
I mean, yeah, it's a good OEM.
And I love
color
that color. It's a great color, and you don't see a lot of cars in general, let alone VIP cars, in green.
Yeah, I was gonna say the majority are. Well, I mean, the majority are going to be black, silver, or white, just because that's kind of how it's always been, but. I feel like it's acceptable to have like more subdued colors on VIP cars.
I take it you have, just because you've certainly researched that chassis more than I have. But I specifically remember this night when I was still living in the Atlanta area. I was eating somewhere and I walked outside and it was far and away the cleanest first gen GS I've ever seen in my life. Like it literally looks like somebody bought it and just put it somewhere and then put it in that parking lot.
Oh, it's stock?
And it was, yeah, it's like split three spoke wheels, like original. Like it was ridiculous. Anyway, it was like a champagne and a brownish. Is that two-tone factory? Do you know?
What, champagne top, brown lower?
Like brownish. At least it looked brown in the light that I was looking at.
I would say no. They did come in like that champagne-y kind of old person car.
Kind of.
But no.
But it wasn't two-tone?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Yeah, well then that means they were just fucking, dude, that thing was to the point where that was probably like 2018. I still remember it. It was super clean.
Yeah, I've seen a few clean examples. Obviously, when you own a car, you notice that more.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's like maybe one or two here in Chattanooga that are fairly clean, still completely stock.
Just ones that you've seen or like you know the owners?
I don't know the owners at all. Just stuff that I've seen driving on the road that obviously catches your eye because you know that chassis. So
I want to ask you this because I've told Ben about this and he's like, holy shit, you're right. Would you say that it's true that the cleanest Lexuses you see on the road that are stock always have the fucking Lexus front plate?
Yeah. Oh, like actually, the dealership. I think I might still have one of those. You're talking about like the metal, the metal with like the Lexus letters on it. Yeah.
I swear. I swear to God, every like really clean, just stock Lexus that I see, I'll know that it's really clean a mile down the road because they'll have one of those fucking plates on there.
Yeah.
Came straight at the factory.
It's ridiculous, dude. Board. I don't know I guess the old folks that drive them are like
the original owner and actually took pride in it. So
Lexus fans. Yeah. So they take it to the dealership every couple of months, get it serviced.
It has
all
to
that.
Be, man.
Those like are the best
just like
people
the Ferrari
to buy
guys
from.
That wear the Ferrari hat.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Have which the F1 jackets.
I suppose
and shit.
That's true with Lexus, being that it is a higher luxury brand or off brand of Toyota. Like it does have that kind of following, or probably did. So like people buying those cars brand new probably did treat it the same way as like, you know, the guys that buy Ferraris, they buy the hats.
Same way we
stuff,
are.
Yeah.
We're not buying them new, but they're
treating exactly.
them just like they are.
Right, right. Okay, so back to the Aristo. Mm-hmm. Interior stuff. What all did you do with the interior? Because being an Aristo, it already has, you know, it had wall seats.
Mm-hmm. It had the wool seats. So I was completely against changing any of that, doing leather seat covers or anything like that.
Preserving the Japanese.
That's what I wanted. That original look.
Which is obviously different from how it is in Japan. Like a lot of those guys, because these cars come with wool seats, a lot of the guys in Japan, when they go and do an all out VIP build, they probably will switch to the leather seat covers because that's what's, you know, unique. Over here, if you buy a Japanese chassis and it has the wool seats, you're like, okay, I want to preserve those because that's what's different.
Yeah, and that's how it is here. A lot of the cars we get have those leather seats.
Right.
So it was cool to have that car with those wool, and they're extremely comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And I've never been a fan of things like, you know, the diamond stitching that becomes now the common VIP interior to have and all that stuff. So I wanted to keep that original. I ended up finding a set of, you know, the half lace seat covers.
Yep.
That was my max. That's just that's
what
lace
covers, no tables,
everything,
no curtains.
No tables. That's just not my style. It's clean, simple, still looks good. And still functional.
Hell yeah.
So that's my style. There was no VIP accessories on the inside or anything like that.
Yeah.
And, did you have any, just because I remember always like, because it was an Aristo, I would see the intercooler under there, and I was like, fuck yeah, that thing is a super engine. Did you do any engine work to that car?
No, I didn't get to that point where that was going to be my next step.
Oh, we didn't even talk about this. This was a factory twin turbo
car. This was a factory twin turbo vehicle. Upgraded intercooler, all the piping, everything, all that stuff was done. But no, it didn't get to that step. It was a fairly quick car. It's even quicker now with the new owner. No, that was going to be the next step, to do a single turbo swap.
Probably.
Well,
the manual thing was, I was on the fence with, I really, that's not one of my go-tos. Mm-hmm. I'm not a manual guy, honestly.
Oh, fair enough.
I know I showed this to you, but I feel like you may have seen it because I take it you would go through like GS300, just tags and shit. So it's very possible that you saw it, but there was a I think it was silver, and I don't remember that what kit specifically it was, but it looked like an Abflug style kit. Like it looked
really, really
like motorsport with like fucking headlight size fogs with like the
plexiglass,
like whatever.
Right.
It was so, I had never ever seen, I mean, a GS for starters, but like an older, like VIP chassis car set. It was like a Wangen car. It was like, it was so fucking cool.
And then there was this post that you'd sent it to me. It was a post of this car. Like it was a couple pictures of it. And then they had videos of it.
Here, hold on. I want to show it to you because either you've seen it, but if you haven't, I want to show it to you.
But yeah, they did like a highway pull in it, and this thing was just like, I think it was built in whatever time it was from, like probably the early 2000s. Yeah. Like it was built then, and it's just been the same since. This thing was like insanely fucking fast and like well composed too, and it just looked like a really cool.
So this is GT it car. Right here. You can swipe.
Oh yeah.
Those, have you seen that? Mm-hmm. Dude.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get you to send that. That thing is absolutely ridiculous.
Like, ever since I saw that, now I'm like, fuck, I want to set up a big body like that. Like, that is so cool.
To see that, that's VIP GT to me. I think a lot of people associate GT with it. Like, it has to be absolutely wild styling. I think that it can be, like, clean, more motorsport styling.
Personally, I wouldn't even say that's VIP. I don't even think they had a VIP thought in their mind. I think...
You're probably right.
I think their homies were out on the fucking... Wang and Wong gun. I don't know. But I think their fucking homies were out there and they're like, well, I got this GS. They're like, dude, it has a fucking 2J twin turbo. And like, yeah, you right. And then you just, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's, I just thought in the amount of time that I've been like into this shit, I've never seen a car like that until I had seen that.
Unique. Yeah, it's a dope car. Well, I'll throw the pictures up on the screen while we're looking at it, but it's pretty sick. But yeah, now you ended up selling the Aristo. Mm-hmm. So you got out of that chassis. You luckily sold it to, you know, a friend. Yeah. So it's still kind of around. You still get to see it.
Yeah, my wife's best friend owns it and she's taken really good care of it. Kind of put her own style into it.
Yeah, but no, it's I love good hands. I love still seeing the car. Like, oh, yeah. It's nice to be able to see it around.
That's what people are like. Do you miss it? Yeah, I miss it. I see it every single week.
Yeah. And what are you in now? What did you transfer over into?
That's special. I'm in just my daily driver at the moment, 2016 GS350F Sport.
Which is my favorite generation, like newer Lexus. I was going to say GS, but it's not. Like out of all of the newer Lexus models, this is my favorite shape. I think the proportions are right. It looks super sporty. It's a good looking car.
Yeah, it's definitely a good looking car. It definitely had no plans to really do much to it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we all modify pretty much everything we own.
Can't it's a disease.
Yeah, it's it's just now got some wheels on it. Put Ordens on it. Pretty classic wheel. I mean, it looks good on it.
It's on coilovers.
Yeah, it's on BC Extreme Lows.
Which, when you imagine a daily, you probably think this thing's sitting up a little bit higher. No, it's still it's still decently low. It's fitted. You know, I want to say that it's got that like. It has the fender to lip look, but it tucks to make sure you don't ever hit your fenders.
Yeah, but yeah, that's pretty much how it sits. And I drive the thing 130 miles a day, 5 days a week to work. So
it is such a good looking daily. Like I would love to have the same exact setup as a daily. It's a good looking car.
And, but. I mean, my plan is to build another vehicle, obviously a VIP chassis, but I want it to give me that. I don't want to just hop into anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to just get on Marketplace, find another GS or whatever I find and just build it.
So that leads me, he's probably about to ask, but I'll just ask, what is the next, what would be the next ideal?
I said, I want it to be something that gives me that same feeling that the Aristo had.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in a way kind of like a lot of guys that were leaning towards the JZX 100, chassis, but we all know how out of control that's gone.
Yeah, I should have expected it, but it just became like as soon as it was like, hey, these are legal, everyone's like, is that credit card TikTok? It's like, where'd you get that? Give me that.
Once it hits the JZX 110, the one that looks like the Corolla,
I'm all for that one too,
dude. Yep. That's gonna be the fucking sweet spot because nobody's gonna want that because it looks so much. And
there's
like
a couple
Corolla.
Actually. There was one at Simply Clean, the same Simply Clean you probably saw my Aristo at. That was it's called the Verosa.
I love those things.
Those things are so cool. They're also a hideous car.
Yeah. They look like a G35 that's really struggling to keep it together.
It's the same thing where it's like, objectively, tell me why this car is beautiful. And you can't, other than saying that it's just fucking weird.
No, Verosas, that's cool. Verosas are so cool to me because they are so unbelievably under the radar. Like, yeah. I would literally say two out of three people that are into cars would have no fucking idea what a Verosa is.
Well, and it's one of those cars that even if you're not into cars, you could easily pinpoint that on the street. Like, I imagine, you know how like
those got two giant holes in the front end.
You know how like kids are like completely unfiltered in some of the shit that they say? Yeah. Like, I feel like if a 5-year-old kid saw that on the street, like, he would literally say, "Mommy, why is that car so ugly?"
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's 100% like something that makes it cool.
In a really weird way, that was kind of what, like, the first, I'll be 100% honest, the first time I saw one of those, I'm like, that's a weird fucking front bumper for a G. Well, I've never seen that before.
But that's what makes it underrated or under the radar. Yeah, it's
but that's what I'm saying is it's like, it was set. It took me like a good 2-3 times seeing it until getting to the hashtag. Wait, what the fuck is a Verosa? And then I started looking up. I was like, oh shit, this thing's pretty cool.
Is it factory 1J or 2J?
It's a 1J.
It's a 1J. Yeah, that's what I thought. So yeah, I mean, you see it and you're like, oh, that thing's strange looking. And then you hear it and you're like, holy fuck, that's cool. I want that.
So yeah, between that and some part of me actually would want to see you get into like a 110. Just to see where you
never know.
Because I think that, honestly, I think if anybody could do one of those really cool, it would be you. Like, yeah, okay. That has always been the weirdest, like, little thing between, like, that and a Corolla. It's just like, okay, take the Corolla Econo box and make it as aggressive as you possibly can. And that's a JZX 110.
Yeah.
I mean, they're built on the IS300 chassis, so it's essentially the same car.
What about what other chassis are you kind of interested in or looking?
At the moment, my path is headed probably towards a Crown Majesta, slightly different than the model.
Funny you say.
Do you have one for sale, don't you?
I do, yeah. You're interested?
I want a Crown Athlete.
We all want a Crown
Athlete. Yeah, we all do.
I don't think there's any, like, if you guys listening or watching have not ever seen a Crown Athlete, just go search one and you cannot tell me you don't want it.
I need to look and see. Do you know off the top of your head what the first year for the Athlete was?
No, I don't.
Because I feel like, it's 98, right? That's coming up fast.
Probably.
That they'll be available. So
that's the one that looks the most
probably like mid-2000s, but I'll just bide my time and I'll never talk about it and I'll never let you talk about it on the YouTube. And I'll just be able to slide right in one of those bad boys once they're legal.
I feel like those may actually be one of those cars that when it becomes legal, like, pops off like the Chaser did.
Oh, I mean, 100%.
Because it's a really good looking car.
Yeah, look at it.
It's like an LS400, but it looks better. Like, it looks more sporty.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would be interesting to see what happens with those.
I have a buddy that has a newer Crown.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Won't name his name just for legal purposes.
Oh, I think. but is this person on Instagram?
They are. They do live on the East Coast.
It's not the person that I thought it was.
Yeah.
Majesta, you say the generation that I have, you're interested in the one after that? Is that what you're kind of looking at?
Yeah, it has that, like,
the Cadillac,
kind of look, thin tail light, stuff like that. That's kind of what I'm leaning towards.
I mean, that's definitely an underrated chassis.
Yeah.
And you can still actually afford one of those right now.
You can. I haven't bought one and put it on TikTok.
I was going to say, well, I remember there was one night where somebody sent it to me on Instagram. And this is that we didn't live together at this point, but somebody sent it to me and this was like a year ago. They were selling it for the same amount that they sold my Majesta when I bought it, like 2017 or whatever the fuck it was. And I was like, Liam. Liam, I could,
wait,
man. Because, like,
is this the one that I told you about? The one when I was looking?
No, it was, I called you at like 10 at night, just fucking rabid. Like, should I do it? I don't even know.
Oh,
can I do it? I don't know.
Yeah, I remember.
I think that's how it was when you sent me that. Crown
Majestic. Yeah, I was going to say, because I found one of that generation in... What?
It's Florida.
Is it one? Are they 171? Is that what those are? Okay, yeah. I found one in Florida that was a 1UZ car. So that's like, that's the one that, you know, both of us want. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, some people want the 2J ones, but it had maybe 60,000 kilometers on it, and it was $7,500.
Yeah, pretty cheap.
And I was like, oh my God. Like, yeah. I debated buying it over the one that I had, but ultimately, I wanted to buy the one that I had because it's like a fucking brand new car. But yeah, no, it is an interesting chassis.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm leaning towards. But I mean, never know what can happen. I never thought I'd be in the Aristo after owning the first gen GS either. So
yeah, it's kind of if you're in the market for something and if something comes along and it fits right, you know.
Yeah, a lot of those cars are still attainable.
Yes.
Price wise.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I just saw that. Because you probably know them, but Hoshi Motion, those guys, they're in Georgia.
That's where we got my wife's Gloria from. Okay. Hoshi Motion. Yeah.
So they just got a GZG50 Century in, which I'm really interested in those because I saw a video of a white one on Brabus Monoblock 3s that had no camber, weak specs, which is static and really low, and it was... I was like sold. I was like, I want a GZG50 so bad.
It's like obviously the epitome of like the VIP car.
That is the top of the line, like the car. But yeah, I saw that they are just getting one in and they have it listed for like 20 grand. Yeah, and 20, I was like,
right under 20 grand.
That I was like, one, all right, yep. Never mind. That's out of my reach.
Yeah.
I'd have to get real lucky and find one.
Yeah, I'm definitely taking my time till I find the right one. That speaks to me at the right price. And
well, after this, you can go test drive the Majestic if you like it. You know, we can figure something out. But no, I'm definitely excited to see what you get into next.
Yeah, there's definitely no rush.
There never should be. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the things with these cars is doing it right. And, you know, it wouldn't be a VIP car because, you know, VIP just as a word. I mean, very important person. Obviously, that doesn't tie into the cars at all.
You guys are conceited as fuck.
No, I'm just saying, like,
it definitely
like,
is not what it means.
No, not at all. Not at all. But like, everything has to be top tier. Everything has to be up to, you know, a certain standard and a level, and that's you can't rush that stuff. Right. So
that's why I said, like, taking it back to the whole, you can own a VIP chassis and not own a VIP car.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think a lot
of
kids. I
think that's a really important distinction to make.
It is.
Because like a lot of people are like, I just got an LS and port coilovers on it. It's a VIP car.
And that's the difference. And like I said earlier at the beginning of this, everyone starts somewhere.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. And I mean,
as long as you have that vision of what you want.
That's exactly where my car started. I mean, I didn't have coilovers. I got really lucky to get like a super cheap air suspension set up. But when I first got this car, it was like, okay, how can I find the cheapest coilovers possible? I debated doing the super coilovers because they're cross-compatible with these.
We all do that, especially when you're brand new to it. And if you don't have somebody that's like been around the block for a little while,
right?
You don't have any point of reference.
I feel like sometimes it's important to have that person in your corner that's like, no, don't do that because you'll regret it later.
Well, and I did. But that's the thing is it's like, I don't know about you, like in New York, but like for me, I didn't, when I started building my RSX, like it was just me. Like anything that I like learned about like kind of the state of the culture at that time and like what the trends were and like what the styles were and stuff was all Instagram.
Right.
Yeah. And it was just how I was perceiving it. Like I didn't have any friends that had been around the block at the time. So, you know, when I did the same thing we all do when you have zero guidance is like Plasti did this, Plasti did that, you know, Raceland, like whatever, which if I had had somebody that was that voice be like, just wait on it. Just like
save up your money.
Just save the money for this thing that you like really want.
Yeah. Right.
But at the same time, you have to balance that with exactly what I'm doing with my lowering equipment. Like,
is realistic for you? Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think it's just a balance, but no, it's just what he said. Like, we all have those things that we do when we're new where we could have like been patient or whatever, and we just decided not to. And it's like, if you're new and you weren't just like spitting in somebody's face, that was like, fuck you. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, other than that, you don't have a point of reference.
That's why I've always been very careful with the YouTube build series on my LS. Mm-hmm. It has always been VIP style LS 400 mm-hmm. because I've like now, yeah, once it gets closer to being finished, people are like, yeah, that's like a VIP car. But I never wanted anybody to be like, this kid's trying to act like that's a VIP car.
This is I always like put the VIPs. Atlanta area thing I was talking yeah, about earlier.
Exactly. I just wanted to cover my bases and be like, this is VIP style because, yes, I have the vision for what I want it to be, and it will be a VIP car. But right now, it's not there. So I've always just like titled it as play VIP it safe, style.
But, yeah, I mean,
I've always
you have a VIP car. And,
right now I have a car that is like six different colors of primer and some green side cladding.
Trust the process.
Absolutely trust the process.
All of a sudden we're all just like gazing at it. You said that and I could feel all of us going,
yeah.
Chrome wheels, chrome tint.
I know. It's something. But I want to get a little bit just quickly before we end into Riverside. I mean, I know we talk about Riverside all the time, but you are directly involved with Riverside and have been for some time. So I'll let you speak on that.
What do you want to know?
What's your involvement with Riverside? What do you feel like you bring to the table
I've
with
been
that?
With Mason doing this since the beginning. Mm-hmm. Him and Scud that you've talked about before. Essentially had the original idea.
Yeah.
And then I was the third person that was brought into this. So the three of us started this from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then it just kind of grew from there.
How did you meet Mason? Just through cars.
Yeah, through cars. So I moved to Chattanooga, got into the car scene here. Made a couple of friends, all people that we still all hang out with now.
Yeah.
Brent and Matt and all them. And then I think Mason at the time and a few others lived in Dalton.
So this is a while ago.
This is a while ago.
I didn't realize it went way back before Riverside.
Yeah. This is way before all that. And you know, we would all kind of meet up once a week, out in Dalton, pretty much make the drive out there. Just a group of us, you know, five, six of us just hanging out at a car wash,
yeah,
or going to go get food or stuff like that. And that's how I met Mason.
That's
obviously
cool.
Riverside came years later after that. But that's our origins of meeting. And I think he wanted someone that had been in the scene for a long time.
Yeah.
Been to a lot of shows, and kind of knew the ins and outs of everything and used that to kind of help create what Riverside would be today.
Sure. Yeah. Obviously Riverside now brings out, always has, honestly, I think over the years has always brought out a lot of VIP cars. That probably has a lot to do with you, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does. And they definitely draw a lot of attention. That's, like I said, I've been in the VIP scene, whether built a VIP car or not at the time, for a long time, and built those friendships with, I guess, what you would call the heavy hitters mm-hmm. in the scene.
Like Fortune Minds,
Fortune
definitely
Minds, Liberty,
worth mentioning. Yeah.
Like I said, Larry and the Infamous Guys, stuff like that. It's a big part of the VIP culture in the Southeast and on the East Coast in general.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously now being a part of Liberty VIP. And those guys they're, like I said, they brought me in this family and they are big supporters of Riverside.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I would say they would eventually make their way out to Riverside anyway.
Yeah. They would just hear about it and
a lot of people are still hearing about Riverside to this day.
Yeah.
But yeah, they definitely come in big part to support me, as one of their, you know, club members and stuff like that.
No, that's awesome. And it's actually interesting too, because obviously I found Riverside on my own through stuff, but what drew me to Riverside the very, very first year that I missed out on was seeing a picture of Scotty's car, Scotty's mm-hmm. Y33. And I was like, man, I've always wanted to see that car. And then I just saw the pavilion. I was like, that looks really cool. Next year I went and I would see VIP cars and I was like, okay, this is really sick. Like, I've been obsessed with VIP cards, but up until now, there's not been an event that I've gone to where I've actually seen them. And it's Riverside for me,
in that much, that quantity as well too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you'll see like one or two here or there, but like the first year that I went to Riverside, like, I remember, shit, I'm blanking on his name now, but the white silver two-tone LS at the Workmeisters, it was a pre-facelift UCF 20. I'm blanking on the name.
I'm pretty sure it started with a D. I met that guy. He was a super nice guy, but he literally dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, he's like big into drifting stuff now, but he had that car at the time, which I loved. And then I remember just seeing, I don't remember, when was the first time Nax brought the Y32 to Riverside? That wasn't until a few years later, I want to say.
Yeah, they've been coming for probably like 3 years or so now.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I remember seeing that. Well, I saw that car at Simply Clean, but like seeing it at Riverside with, you know, Luxury Abstract having a booth there and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Sick.
Yeah, he actually, so sick. Funny story, he came out. I invited him out and he wasn't really sure about, you know, logistics and all that stuff. Uh-huh. He's a very busy man.
You talking about Nax?
No, Augie.
Augie from Luxury Abstract.
Luxury Abstract, okay. Yeah. He actually took a bus all the way down to Riverside.
This year?
No.
Back then? That
when he had his booth.
What?
Yeah. All his stuff was shipped to me, to my house, the wheels, mm-hmm. everything for display. And he took what he calls the China bus from New York. Literally a China bus full of Chinese people. Just all what? The way down to Chattanooga.
No shit. Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. I got a chance to meet him and chat with him for a second at Riverside this year, which was awesome to just kind of pick his brain and talk about his, I want to have him on here at some point, cause I feel like he's got a lot of stuff that we could talk about,
but
his car back in the day, his F50.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Most like ridiculous.
The Bentley front end.
Yeah. Crazy. I mentioned it on here too. It's wild, but, yeah,
that's the OG days.
Yeah. Riverside now, this year, obviously they did something different and we've mentioned the Simply Clean Expo. Mm-hmm. You guys actually had Liberty VIP and Fortune Mines over in Finley Stadium.
Yeah.
How did that go over for you guys? Cause obviously I didn't get to go see it cause I was super tied down and busy and I'm upset that I didn't get to see it, but I did catch up with all of the guys and hang out with them afterwards.
Right. Yeah, it went great. I was kind of the same way with the actual pavilion side of the things. I mm-hmm. didn't even really get to see anything over
just,
there either.
Just kind of running around.
But yeah, it went great. Everything went smooth. Nax and the guys are always like,
they're just
helpful
down, yeah.
with everything. So I don't even have to do everything myself. Mm-hmm. They're all down for making sure everything
looks just, as presentable yeah, as possible.
Just,
yeah.
just like the vehicles that they bring.
Yeah, yeah. They bring the top tier cars. And that's why they have that space over at, you know, Finley Stadium for Riverside, is because every year Fortune Mines and Liberty VIP have brought so many ridiculous cars that they need their own section.
Yeah. And our original plan was, I think, kind of obviously judging, we never used the space before.
Yeah.
To fit somewhere between like 10 and 14 cars, maybe. Mm-hmm. And the rest of them kind of overflow into the, you know, the road and stuff like that. We actually fit, I think, every single car in that, minus maybe three of them.
That's
I think there was probably like 25, 30 cars damn. In the stadium.
I did not realize that.
Yeah. It was, we packed it in there pretty good. But it was a good time to have all the kind of have VIP section essentially.
No, and I love that because for me, like, this is stuff that I've been obsessed with for, you know, like I said, the better part of like 8 to 10 years, just doing my own research and deep dives on the internet and stuff. Like, for me to be able to see that stuff like in person and more events like Riverside start to tailor stuff to that, it's fucking awesome. I love being able to showcase that culture and expose it to more people.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah, that's what I was going to bring up next is that kind of
like
exposure.
Younger generation, like
helping
seeing
the scene grow.
Right. It gives people something to aspire to. When you right. see, you know, a big group or a collective of cars that are all just on a ridiculous standard, you're like, damn. Yeah, I kind of would like to build something up yeah. to that level someday.
And they're all great guys.
They are. Yeah, they're all super down to earth.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I got to catch up with them after the event. It was funny. I pulled out in the Majesta after packing everything up, and they were all lined up in the street, ready to go shoot somewhere. And I was like, oh my God, perfect timing. I like pulled up and said what's up to Nax and spoke to a couple of the guys. And yeah, they went across the street and shot. And I was just thankful that I got to even do that, because I didn't get to see any of the cars besides that time. So that was cool for sure.
They're good people. Very welcoming, and definitely want to help the VIP scene grow.
I love that. I love that. But this has been cool. Riverside is definitely something that's
appreciate you guys having me.
No, absolutely. Thank you for coming on and talking about this stuff, and I'm glad that we could an episode.
Thanks for sitting in our sauna of a fucking podcast.
I'm good. Yeah, I don't know how you're not sweating in your hoodie right now. But yeah, it was cool to do an episode on VIP culture. It's definitely been something that everybody's been on my case about. They're like, do an episode just talking about VIP stuff. And I'm like, I don't feel like I can. Like, yes, I am building.
You're doing a great job.
I'm doing my best, but I never want to be like the person that's like talking on something that
authoritative.
I tread real lightly around that, because like I said, again, I'm the new kid on the block. Like, my car is just now getting to, like, when it's finished, I'm hoping, yeah, it's going to be on that level where it can sit with some of these other cars. But, you know, I never want to be sitting here like, well, this is VIP culture. This is a VIP car. This is not, like, that's not me.
That's how it should be anyway.
Right.
That's how it should be in every kind of aspect of no matter what car you own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's kind of why I like being a part of that group that I'm in as far as Liberty and Fortune Minds and stuff like that. Because they do bring the best of the best top tier cars.
And I agree.
People would expect them to be a certain way towards you.
Right.
And but they're all super down to earth guys. Like, I just don't ever want to be.
It should be helpful if you have a question.
Exactly.
They're willing to tell you what they've done to vehicles.
But no, there's a level of respect.
Imagine that. They don't gatekeep, and they're awesome.
No gatekeeping.
Yeah.
No correlation whatsoever. No.
Right.
That's how it should be. Absolutely.
But no, like for me, there's like a level of respect that comes with. There's been a lot of people that are, you know, around way before my time that have a lot of experiences, and
that's
I never
probably what it has a lot to do with too. Is
I never want to speak for anybody. I don't want to speak for the culture, because I haven't been around long enough. It's not my place to do that. So that's why you guys haven't gotten an episode specifically on VIP
and
stuff.
You never will.
No, we'll do one. Now I've been, you know, I've been certified. Lucas came and sat and talked about it for 2 seconds.
You're doing a great job with everything.
The next episode, I'm going to be like, this is a VIP car. Don't put fucking curtains in here. I'm just kidding. I'm not.
Unsubscribe.
We appreciate that, man. Thank you.
I do appreciate that. I'm doing what I can.
And I've heard other people talk about you as far as what you're doing with VIP stuff in general too.
I mean, I'm trying to do what I can to like make it more like I want the culture to get bigger, but ultimately, like, my thing is I want more of the younger generation that are getting into cars to take that, not necessarily like that VIP route. You don't have to go buy a VIP car. I'm not trying to have people like impress me or impress the elders or whatever. I want kids to just take
the elders. We're in the VIP tribe.
Oh, I just want kids to take more of that direction into building higher quality cars. I want them to aspire to build better cars and put more effort into things. And also, like, my take on my car personally is that I'm doing the crazy amount of work, and I'm doing all this stuff that takes a lot of time and takes a lot of money, but I'm not doing it to a point where you can see that I did that. Like, that's one of my biggest things that, like, it doesn't bother me, but I see a lot of kids that they justify the fact that if they're going to put in the work, they're going to put in the time, the money, they have to do it in an outlandish way where everybody's going to see that they did it. And I don't think that that's what VIP culture is about. I think it's like we go back to talking about Sultan's car earlier, it's like a lot of those details, they're there, but most people won't notice them.
Right.
And I want more kids to kind of pick up on that and be like, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Like, it doesn't need to be super outlandish for people to notice me or that I did this.
That's the thing about VIP cars. They'll draw your attention anyway.
Exactly.
Without that eye-catching thing that some people will use to draw attention on purpose.
You don't need to have 10-inch wide flares with 15-inch wide wheels, whatever, to like stand out. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
No.
It's just like taking it back to basics and just figuring out what you can do to make something stand out and look good.
You're making a statement without trying to make a statement.
Yeah, and you can't buy style either. Like, a lot of this stuff is based on vision, and just like, it's a lot of thought that goes into it. And I love being able to get that across in videos, because you know, a lot of my demographic is kids that are younger. It's, you know, the type of kids that probably will go buy a VQ and put a shitty exhaust on it. You know, if I reach that demographic, how can I help them then guide into a better direction where it's like, they're not going to do that forever. Maybe they start thinking more about like, hey, can I build a car this way? Or they look for more unique chassis or whatever. And that's,
and you have to be willing like to teach these people too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my DMs are always open, by the way, guys. Yeah, like, same. If you have questions, whatever, I'm like always open. I don't have all of the knowledge in the world, but whatever stuff I can share, I'm willing to.
Yeah, I do the same thing all the time. I have people reach out. I've had, you know, teenagers just getting into the scene, reaching out, more than willing to help anybody.
Yeah, and I'm
if
sure
you're willing to learn, I will teach you something.
Yep, that's the thing. If you're willing to learn, you're going to get. If you're willing to learn, like, people that could teach you are going to see that. They're going to be a lot more apt to help you if you're not.
Probably isn't a whole lot of like community support for first gen GSs or Aristos. Right.
And I'm not even talking about that. I'm just talking in general.
Yeah.
And not even with VIP car stuff, anything. I mean, I've dabbled in all of it. So, I mean, I'm willing to help anybody grow into what you want to be.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've even specifically told people, You have to have the vision for your car. I'll help you get there.
Right, right.
But I'm not. I'm never specific as far as what you need to buy.
This is what your car needs.
Yeah,
to look
You don't need to have this and this and that and that part. You build what you want to build. I'll help you with the vision.
I was gonna say me and Matt have touched on this before. It's kind of like providing the tools you would need to get where you want to go, as opposed to just giving you everything. Right. I think we talked about that in the gatekeeping episode, which is a really good listen for anybody who's interested.
And like touching on what you said, like you didn't have that
guidance
or that guidance. So
right, exactly.
I'm more than willing to be that guidance.
Yeah,
and knowing I came from not having that guidance.
It's so accessible now with social media to be able to like see a cool car and hit someone up and you know. There's definitely a wrong and right way about approach. Like, some people will just literally send me a message and be like, "Oi, what is this? Blah blah blah." Or like, "Where do you like?" Oh my god, the thing that drives me nuts.
I mean, that's the. Always going to be attitude. It's always going to be how you approach it. Because I
get a little weird about. I will always get the messages of people, like my headlights specifically. Mm. They're like, "Yo, send me a link to the headlights." Yeah. I'm like, what do you mean send you a link? The motherfuckers took a year and a half to build. I had to like CAD design brackets for them. And like, you can't just buy. I can tell you all of the parts that went into making it. And like, I don't have the file for the 3D printer, but I could tell you the whole process. But a link, no. A lot of this stuff is custom.
I think a good rule of thumb for anybody listening to this is like, if you're going to ask somebody something, be considerate. Like
of them being human,
like legitimately,
too,
yeah. All you really need to do is be considerate. Because it's like the problem is when people come in not being. It's like, motherfucker, not only do I not know you, I don't owe you anything.
Yeah, they definitely. You know what I mean? There's an approach.
So it's like, I think when you approach somebody like, "Hey, man, just had a quick question for you. Whatever, this, this, and this."
Yeah.
And if they're not a dick, like our boy Lucas. He's going to be like, "Yeah, man, like what can I help you with? Whatever."
Right.
If they are a dick, they'll either just like straight up leave you on red or just like give you some snarky ass answer. They're not going to fucking help you either way. So what does it matter?
Right. Right.
Yeah. I've been lucky not to have anybody really like that. Everybody's usually pretty appreciative.
Yeah. So it's just be considerate and your success rate will be infinitely higher.
But yeah, never, you know, don't feel scared to reach out to people and ask questions.
Yeah, like, that's what I was going to say too. A lot of people feel kind of overwhelmed speaking to
somebody's got somebody's got a nice car. Yeah, they think like that they're like
automatically a dick.
Nobody's on a pedestal. Like, we're all still people.
We're just people.
The cars speak for themselves. If somebody has a really nice car, that's dope. But they are still a person. They still work a job. They still have whatever issues going on in their life, like everybody's still human. So yeah, don't ever be scared to reach out to people just because they have a nice car or maybe they have a large following or whatever. You know, reach out to people, ask questions, but you know, just be polite, be nice, be respectful, and you know, if somebody doesn't want to answer, that's fine. They don't owe you anything. But if they do, then that's super helpful and you learn new things. So, yeah. And that's ultimately a big part of this podcast is that we'd like to be able to open up this dialogue to more people and just talk about stuff that, you know, oftentimes may not be a conversation that's easy to have. Some people disagree with stuff or, you know, especially some of the episodes that we've done on controversial topics like rep wheels and all that stuff. It's like, it's hard to have a conversation, but it comes down to perspectives. If you can open your mind to different perspectives and discuss other people's ideas, you can come to your own conclusions. You can form your own opinions for yourself. You know, it doesn't have to be like, this is right, this is wrong. We really enjoy doing that with this podcast, you know, whether it's definitely. Just me and Matt here or having
guests. And it's kind of like that's one of the coolest things about having guests is it's like
it's a different person's
perspective. It's a third perspective. So it's like all of the, you know, with situations like mine and yours and many other people's, whereas like you come into this maybe not having that guidance. I feel like our hope for the podcast is like having some semblance of that guidance or at least kind of like formulating where you're at on the shit that we talk about and being able to have like a halfway, I don't want to say educated, that's a little weighty, but like at least a halfway informed conversation with somebody that could ultimately lead them to be like, yeah, cool. I mean, I'm down to like help you with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's cool. And like for kids that are listening that maybe don't know the direction they want to go with a car or, you know, they can't decide on a chassis or whatever, maybe just some of the things that we talk about can lead them in a direction or lead them to the thought process that takes them in the right direction. So yeah, with that being said, I think we're pretty good. I'm starting to get uncomfortable with these chairs. I don't know how you feel, but the seating, it's horrible. I say that at the end of every
episode. That the chairs are like our biological timer for like, oh, we're almost at the 2 hour mark.
Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah, but thank you guys so much for listening or watching. We do really appreciate it. And once again, it's a huge deal if you guys can share this with your friends. Posting it on your Instagram stories goes a long way, honestly. You know, whether you have 100,000 followers or you just have 200 followers, if it's just 200 followers, that's 200 people that could potentially see this podcast. And even if one of those people hears something and likes it and relates to it, that's awesome. We really just want to get this out to people that actually like it. So yeah, it really means a lot for you guys that do love this and enjoy listening to it to share it with your friends and your people.
We greatly appreciate that. Real quick. Mm-hmm. Discord homies.
Oh yeah, we didn't do a stream.
I am so sorry. This is probably like the second week in a row we didn't do a stream. So it may... Maybe we'll turn into something that's kind of like we'll give you ahead of time. But for me and Liam and just everything we have going on, it's looking like it might be a little bit unrealistic to do it every single week. But if you are in the Discord, via the Discord, we'll keep you updated on that. But I felt like since that the responsibility for that has kind of shifted to me, as we spoke about last episode, I wanted to say a little apology to you guys for that.
But so. if there is anybody, like we mentioned in this episode, that, you know, has a lot of insight or information on VIP culture and they'd like to share, the Discord would be an awesome place for that. The link should be in the description. For some reason, if the link is not working, because they have like an expiration thing on the links where it expires after 7 days, I can't tell you how many times I've changed the settings so that it doesn't expire. And I will still get messages saying it's not working. If it's not working, just message me. I'll send you an actual link. But that's a really good place to share. Like, we've got lists of all of the subcultures of the different things that we're interested in. And there's a VIP section. So if you have a lot of insight on it and you're willing to share, that'd be an awesome place to put that.
And not for nothing, the more people that get involved, the more insight you get. Yeah. On any given thing. So it's kind of like really anybody just
using it for, like, we're finding old, you know, magazine scans and any kind of pictures, whatever, and just sharing knowledge. It's really, really quite cool. So yeah, links in the description, go check that out. And huge shout out to Lucas.
I was gonna say,
for joining.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
You have anything you want to plug, any kind of social media stuff? I know you don't really care that, all that much.
No, it doesn't. I'm not a follower person. If you do want to follow, I actually just recently changed my name from
what I was going to say, because it was JZS147.
Yeah, and it was hard to let that go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's now at @Riverside_Lucas.
That's pretty easy to find.
If you don't, that's cool too.
But yeah, and also, you know, go check out Liberty VIP, Fortune Mines, Riverside, and of course our sponsor Wheel Price. Like I said, all the links are in the description. Go check them out, support them, and yeah, we'll be back next week for another episode, and we appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, dudes.